were creating a world, I wouldn't mess about with butterflies and daffodils. I would have started with lasers. 8 o'clock, day one.
Well, hello everyone, and you're listening to the All Japan Excite series. Are you excited, Stephen?
I am. This is our first show in like 6 months or something.
Why the big gap, Stephen?
This time it's mostly my fault. Insanity of busyness at work and injuries and time issues, and my wife was sick and Christmas and who knows what else.
A whole platitude of excuses I'm hearing.
Oh yeah.
But we don't want excuses, we want excitement. So just before we get into this, I have to tell this story on some sort of show. You're Facebook friends with me, Stephen, so you probably know about this already. But yesterday I had my beard done at a Turkish barber's. And oh my God, it was literally like coming out of, like, I don't know, a match with Bob Backlund or something. They absolutely lay it on thick in those places, like just hands all over my face. And at one point they wrapped a towel around my head. And it was just absolutely like, can you imagine like putting like a dog in a washing machine and then bringing it out and it's all like dripping wet and then putting it back in and it comes out of like the tumble dryer. When he took that towel off my head, I think I looked like that. There was a guy behind me who was literally laughing at the look on my face. So it was just absolutely, but I kind of liked it, you know. I kind of felt more manly as a result of it all.
Oh, I have a hair cutting story that I've never shared.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's pretty entertaining.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So when I first moved to Ottawa, I didn't have a place to cut my hair. So I was just walking around and I saw this place and I walked in. And midway through my haircut, there was another person getting their hair cut and they disappeared to another room with the hairdresser.
Right.
Which I thought was weird. And then at the end of my haircut, I'm not 100% this is what the lady said, but I'm pretty sure she asked me if I wanted to be finished off.
Right.
And then I acted confused and she was like, oh, no, never mind. And then that was the end of it. So wow. I'm not entirely sure what was going on at that place.
Did they actually complete the haircut?
Yeah, it was all done. So I'm not sure.
Okay.
I think I was going to go to that side room with whatever that guy got done. So,
well, okay. I will say that there were many, because I went out in London last night, a lot of admiration for the beard. So whatever those Turkish guys did, they did a good job.
Beards are in, man.
Let's go on. It's all about that line. I mean, I tell you what, it's better than Ted DiBiase's beard, Stephen. Oh.
Mine's pretty shaggy, so
let's move on. Let's go to this first match now because we're deep into 1996. Is that right?
Yeah, July
of 1996, July the 9th, and it's Misawa and Akiyama taking on the Holy Demon Army. So, any notes going into this one, or shall I hit you with a first pass point?
Oh, yeah, hit me, because we've seen this match. We're going to see this match a lot over in the next couple of shows. So.
Well, Bob's points.
Is that your best? Oh, too easy. You weak, pathetic fool.
Such a pity. My first pass point is simply this. For some reason, Taui's awkwardness in the early stages of this match bothered me more than usual. He seemed sloppy, I thought. That said, I will say that I loved his atomic drop into the back suplex move.
It's insane.
I also love how he's seemingly given up on the idea of executing basic moves at this point, and often instead elects to simply throw Akiyama halfway across the ring. It's like he's like, I can't even bother to do any moves, I'm just going to throw you.
So. I like his little slaps and, you know, his big kicks. And yeah, I love the early destruction that Kawada and Taue do at the start. But yeah, I don't know. There's something endearing about Taue's like it's not in this match. I think it's a couple matches later where he goes for a choke slam. He doesn't even lift Akiyama off the ground. He just kind of drops him from like.
Did he not seem like unusually awkward in this match? Like more than usual? I don't know. Maybe I just hadn't seen Tommy in a while.
I think you just haven't seen him in a while because he's always super awkward.
Well, anyway, my second point is that Akiyama is so outmatched in these matches that it really struck me. I mean, it's like the hierarchy is Misawa, Kawada, and Tawe, okay? And remember that Tawe is the Triple Crown champion at this point.
Yeah.
So it's almost like there's a more parity than usual here because maybe even Tawe is above Kawada at this point, given that he's the champion. But Kawada's still Kawada.
Yeah.
And then there's those three, and then there's a huge gulf, like a massive, massive gulf before you get to Akiyama. He really gets his ass kicked in these matches, doesn't he?
Oh yeah, man, and I have noted here how great he is as just this selling fiery little baby face getting destroyed. I was wondering how you think he compares to a Kikuchi or remember Kobashi in those early tags when he was completely outmatched by everyone?
Well, you've actually stolen a point. This was going to be a pass point for many matches later.
Now it's a Grimace point?
But yeah, well, why don't we read out exactly what I said there? I guess we'll just have to eliminate that point later on because I asked the question, where in the greatest face in peril workers do you put Akiyama? Because I think, you know, there's Ricky Morton, obviously. There is Kikuchi, who you mentioned. There's Terry Funk. And there's Kobashi. And there's Rick Martel.
Dustin Rhodes, too, is another I'd throw in there.
And really, he's right there with all of them, isn't he?
Yeah. Especially at this point in his career when he's so young. Like, he's only 2 or 3 years into his career at this point.
Yeah, I don't know. I just said he is particularly good in this role. He's got a lot of spunk about him. And it's quite fun seeing a young man beaten down and not giving up.
he tries. Like he has a lot of fire fighting back. It's not like he's just getting destroyed.
No, with all of this said, my third point, interestingly, is that Misawa takes more of a beating than usual in this one. I thought. I mean, Kawada really kicks the crap out of him in this match. And Misawa has a long period of being faced in peril.
Yeah.
So the match has essentially worked double heat. And I was watching to see exactly how Misawa sells the pain and the punishment. And I think he is also very good in this role. And I winced when Kawada did that backdrop suplex and dropped him on his head. It was just like a... So, yeah, what do you think of Misawa's performance here?
He's a little more subtle, which I kind of like. It's like kind of this... It's not as over the top. It's kind of like a little more... I don't know if it's more realistic, but it kind of has that kind of Bret Hart feel where it kind of feels a little more legitimate because he's not sitting there crying and he's not like Ricky Steamboat, who's another great face in peril,
yeah.
Who's like reaching out to the crowd. You know, he's kind of like, oh, this sucks. This hurts. Getting through it. But yeah, that whole sequence, when they're beating him down, Tawe and Kawada are just like doing the like most casual kicks and slaps, just like treating Akiyama and Misawa like complete garbage.
Yeah.
So great. They were just like, ah, slap and barely kick him just to like, you guys are nothing.
And and that's what really plays into the dynamic of this team, which we haven't really talked about that much, but like, obviously they're a great tag team. For many people, the best tag team, right? Kawada and Tawe.
Yeah.
And they both have, like, Kawada's got his disdainful kicks. Such disdain. And Tawe's got that sense of, like, I can't even be bothered to do a proper move on you. I'm just going to drop you like a piece of crap on the floor. And between them, there is that kind of, I don't know, they're very cool in that way.
Mm.
Now, I've got one point, and it relates to the finish. So do you have any other comments? One final point.
yeah, there's a great sequence there. The babyface comeback when they make the hot tag was really, really good. With Kawada and – or sorry, Misawa and Akiyama doing double dives. I thought that was really good. Before Kawada's sell of the backdrop driver.
Yep.
Where he's kind of like hunching on the ropes and then he gets whipped and his legs give out. And he's just kind of like on Dream Street and then he hits an enziguri and injures his leg. I thought that sequence was absolutely amazing too. Before the finish.
Yeah, no, all very good. My final point is this. It's a question. When was the last time that the regular Tiger Driver actually put someone away? Because as a finisher for Misawa, it seems long dead by 1996. I mean, the Tiger Suplex gets him the win here. And notably, Misawa bails Akiyama out, which is going to be a running theme in all these matches.
Yeah.
But, yeah, what do you think about the Tiger Driver being dead as a finisher? Because
it's interesting because I remember I used to watch a lot more All Japan in that late 90s period, and there'd be like random six mans or like him versus lower guys in like the championship carnival, and he'd win with the Tiger Driver, and it's always like, oh, okay. Like, I guess it's still a finisher. Like, he'd finish on like off like Johnny Smith with the Tiger Driver or whatever.
Yeah,
so they would keep it strong, not in big matches, but on like the littler matches and six man tags and stuff like that. So
yeah, well, I mean, Ric Flair would beat jobbers with this figure four, but like in a big match, win many matches, you know. Just always interesting that his finisher seems like not that well protected in these matches. Anyway, I thought this was a really good match. My star rating was 4.5. Where did you go on it?
I went the dreaded 4.25. I thought the kind of it fell a little long near the end, and the finish seemed a little anticlimactic. So that's why I have it a quarter of a star less than you.
you don't like Tiger Driver kick out Tiger Suplex as a finish?
Yeah. It just seemed like, oh, okay, it's over. I don't know.
All right. Well, let's move on to the next one. It's July the 24th, 1996, and now we have Kenta Kobashi taking on Akira Taue for the Triple Crown. And my first note here is that Kobashi looks like such a fucking dude with his Elvis hair and his jacket. He looks like a character from a Japanese computer game to me. I remember that I had one. We were talking about Sega just before we came on air, Stephen. And there was a game called Shenmue. Shenmue or something.
That it was Shinobi.
It was Shenme.
I don't know that.
Tell me if you ever played that one. Well, have a little Google of that, and you may see what I mean. Kobashi literally looked like he could have walked straight out of that game. And I did cheer also that Jumbo got a name check on commentary when we were looking at the Triple Crown, which I thought was quite cool. They were probably just mentioning that he was the first champion. So do you have any?
Oh, okay, I see what you mean.
Do you see
with
what
the
I mean?
Jacket and stuff? Yeah,
yeah. That's Shenmue. So, what about you, Stephen? Do you have any little notes?
Yeah, the only note I have is I completely forgot that Taue was the champion going into this. So I got very excited to see him with the belts, and I also completely don't remember where the title went from here. So I had no idea who was going to win this. So, you know, watching old matches, that's kind of a good feeling you don't get very often where you have no idea who's going to win a match.
Is it just me or I find it really hard to keep track of who's got the titles when for some reason? Do you?
Well, it's weird because Misawa had them for like the first three of the years in the middle here. So it shouldn't have been that difficult because it wasn't really switching.
Didn't we get like some weird little time when Gordy was the champ at one point?
Yeah,
I seem to remember that. Hansen's had it once or twice as well, hasn't he?
Yeah.
So I don't know, I find it really hard to keep track of that. Anyway,
Bob's points.
Is that your best? Oh, too easy. You weak, pathetic fool.
My first point here is this. Kobashi is so good on offense. I mean, he's really, really amazing. I love that delayed vertical he drops in the early going. He's also really good at selling, both in terms of bumping and in terms of his facial selling of pain. And basically the opposite of what you were saying about Misawa, Kobashi is like a living cartoon.
Yes.
And I basically love that. I love the fact that he's like a living cartoon. He's, you know, I love that in my pro wrestling. Like, that's why I like Pat Patterson as well. He's like a living cartoon. So, yes, Kobashi, a huge performer in every respect of the of that description. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, he's in the mold of Briscoe and Steamboat and Morton. He's yeah, I know that's your cup of tea. You know, it's good. It's great. At times it's just, if I was, you know, if I was going to put it between Kawada and Kobashi, I kind of prefer Kawada's selling more. But there is definitely huge benefits to the type of selling Kobashi does. And obviously the crowd really reacts to it. Like, they get way in on Kobashi going for the title here.
Yeah. Yes, I only have two other points. So if I'll say the second one now, because it relates to Tawe. I like the fact that from the basic position of doing an atomic drop,
yeah,
Tawe can do one of any number of things. Either he can do the atomic drop itself, or he can basically throw the guy across the ring, or he can switch it to that backdrop suplex that we saw earlier. And I kind of like this. It's a cool little position that gives him three different options. And I've written about this before, about, like, it's similar to Flair. Like, everybody rags on the Flair flip, but the Flair flip is actually three different things. Like, he can either go over the turnbuckle to the outside. He can either run across, you know, he can either flip over, run across, and try to come off again. Or he can do that one where he kind of falls on the apron and steps back in.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a similar. And Tawei's atomic drop position is similar. Gives him options as a worker. And I think that's quite cool.
And he does it, too, with the kind of from the chokeslam position. Because, like, he can just drop him. He can slightly pick him up and drop him, or he can pick him all the way up for a real choke slam and drop him.
Yeah, just depends what mood he's in. I think it's quite cool.
Yeah, it's kind of like Fire Pro Wrestling, where you have your weak attack, your medium attack, and your larger attack, depending on how hurt the opponent is. So I guess it depends on how hurt he is, how high he can get him up for the choke slam.
Yeah, and he does the same when, you know, you press back and B, atomic drop, forward and B, and he'll do the throw across the ring and up and B, and you'll do the suplex or whatever. So.
He also, early in this, he hits a Randy Savage elbow drop.
He does. You know, he did. That was pretty awesome.
It was. I marked out big time for that. I did not expect. When Tawe got to the top, I had no idea what was going to happen. And the flying Macho Man elbow drop was not what I expected. But, you know, he hit it and it looked good-ish.
The unpredictable is wasted as a nickname on Johnny Rods. It should be the unpredictable Akira Tawe, shouldn't it?
Not the dynamic T.
Not dynamic T, but yes. Now, I only have one other note, and it relates to the finish yet again. So do you have any other notes on this match?
No, it just it was really good because, like, Kobashi, like, both of them were really focused. Like, Tawe really worked the neck and Kobashi really worked the back. And you have Kobashi just selling his ass off, getting the crowd really hot, and some every near fall he hit, the crowd was really into it. And I assume, you know, near the finish, you're going to talk about Kobashi avoiding death a couple times to get out of it. But yeah,
well, I mainly talk about the leg drop from the top because it's such a absolutely massive move that is. I mean, it is a huge moment for Kobashi's career, and it feels like a big moment. But God, that move, like a leg drop from the top rope is, because it's the way it's not like the Alabama Jam, like the Bobby Eaton move. It is like his massive leg on the back of somebody's head
while they're standing up. John Cena does that now.
Yeah, I've seen him do that move. Yeah.
which is weird. Like, of all the moves to steal, he steals a Kobashi leg drop. But
yeah,
it's that moment where he wins the title was just insane. Like, you see all the fans rush the guardrail. The ring fills up with all the seconds. A really big moment. And I was caught by surprise. And you know, that felt like a really special big moment that we've only seen one or two times throughout this whole series of podcasts. Like when Misawa beat Jumbo, and I think when Taue, when he either won the title or won the Champions Carnival. It's like the only other times it kind of felt this like
big,
momental.
Big, yeah. No, it was a great feel good match and one of the better ones we've seen recently. Would you agree with that? Like,
oh, yeah.
On this show? Pretty awesome. I went 4.5. Where did
you
go? Yes.
4.5. Yeah.
It seems about right for this. I mean, a really awesome match. So highly recommended for a feel-good moment. And, you know, any reason why it falls short of being that kind of near classic or actual classic that you'd look for in the 5 or the 4.75?
That's a good question. It felt like a big, huge moment, but I guess it didn't have the like epicness to the match. Like, I don't know. What was it missing? Well,
maybe the gravitas. I don't know. I mean, I think you could probably put this match up against something like Chaitan Rumble, because that's got the feet,
Yeah.
Steamboat.
Yeah, they're probably pretty similar matches. If I was watching them back to back, they wouldn't be that far off.
It's interesting. I don't really have any reasons why it's not any higher, but it feels like it's about 4.5. So
it does, yeah. I think that's what Charles added too. So,
anyway, we have let's move on, because Kobashi now has his first defense against Stan the Lariat Hansen. It's September the 5th, 1996, and I'll just go straight into my first point, because I think it's possible to miss this.
Bob's points.
Is that your best? Oh, too easy. You weak, pathetic fool. Such a
pity. The story here is quite poignant, I thought, as Kobashi is literally taking on a nightmare from his past. The big bully Stan Hansen, who's given him so many poundings. In the past.
Who's given him some of the most vicious lariats in the history of wrestling.
Like, who's literally killed him time and time again over the past, however long, you know, literally, what, 7, 8 years?
Yeah.
I mean, well, don't forget, Kobashi was around in 1989.
That's so true, yeah.
Like, he's been around a while. And now he's the champion. How is he going to face up to his biggest challenge? And that, I think, is the dynamic here, that Kobashi is acutely aware of the fact that it's Stan Hansen he's up against, and he's slightly afraid possibly of bottling it in this big, you know, now he's the man, and how's he going to face up to this? Like the guy who used to take his dinner money, basically, you know. So did you get any of that I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. This I think it starts right away, because what does Kobashi do? He jumps Hansen before the bell. Just like Hansen always did to him. And that's not an action of a confident man. It's an action of Kobashi, who knows he needs to do everything to get this win. So I think they go right into that.
Well, my second point, Stephen, is that here in this match, we do get two tremendous selling performances. One from Kobashi, who seems to be seeing stars tonight. I mean, you could almost literally see the little birds flying around his head at times. Like I said, he is a living cartoon. And I mean, this match has a lot of him kind of, you know, literally dazed. Do you know what I mean? The little birds. And the other great performance here is from Stan Hansen playing the wounded old bear, especially like after that lariat on the post.
Yeah, which was a great moment.
Yeah. Which was really cool. So, yeah, I only have one other point, Stephen. So the floor is yours, sir.
Oh yeah. So throughout this match, we have before Hansen's lariat on the ring post, we have Hansen just going to town, mauling, as you said, basically Kobashi. He takes apart the ring floor and power bombs him on the cement, and he's at points just laughing at Kobashi while he's kicking his ass. And he's just like, come on, little punk. And he's just slapping him around, just completely destroying him, until we get to that point where Hansen goes for a lariat while they're both on the apron. And then Kobashi ducks and Hansen lariats the ring post. And then his selling of the arm, trying to fight through that while Kobashi really goes to him, was really good. There was some great points here. I don't know why. I don't know if you noticed this, but Kobashi more and more, as we watch him, seemed to be relying on the top rope. And in this match,
yeah,
like he relied on the top a lot. Did you get that sense?
I did, yeah, he did. That was more, and I saw that as a sign of him being a little more desperate in this match, a little bit more kind of, you know, he's got a lot to lose at this point, so he needs to bring out whatever it takes to try to win this, which may involve taking more risks.
Yeah,
paradoxically.
And before we get to the finish here, there's one point where Hansen is really desperate because his arms are hurting, and he does a spinning desperation lariat that knocks down Kobashi that I just loved. It seemed like such a great moment, and you know, it wasn't on par with the lariats from the other Kobashi match or the Hansen matches in 93, but it was really, really cool. I liked it a lot going into the finish.
Yeah. Well, for my third point, it's not so much a point, but quite a long talking point here, okay, is that I often, as I'm sure you do, have a little look around PWO after watching the match, after writing my own thoughts and giving my rating and so on. And then I'll go and have a little look and see what people are saying.
Yeah.
And one person, Atani's Jacket, a frequent poster on the board, was rather critical of this match. I do like him, but he, let's say, is often contrary to what the prevailing view might be on lots of things. Would you say that's fair?
That seems fair.
Yeah. Well, his little review of this match was as follows. The 1996 Hansen-Kobashi match was not very good, he said. I was surprised by how many people liked this on the 1996 yearbook. It seems obvious to me that they didn't know how to work a match where Kobashi was the champion and Hansen was the challenger. The commentator wouldn't stop mentioning how young Kobashi was and how he was the new champion and the fact that Hansen was 47. And yet Kobashi looked worse here than he did in 1991 to 1993, and the match was devoid of any new ideas. And I'll just the child, another frequent poster and contributor to the DVDR 80s project, he had this to say on the reply, which I thought was interesting too. He said, I rewatched the 96 Hansen-Kobashi match, expecting that I'd want to make a full-throated defense of it. But I have to confess that I didn't enjoy it as much this time round. Hansen's performance was excellent. I liked the way he relied on a lot of cheap little counter shots early in the match because he could no longer bull his way through Kobashi. And he made the second half of the match with his selling of the posted lariat arm. He really captured the wounded old bear vibe, but there was something off in Kobashi's performance. He sold being knocked silly by some of Hansen's early shots, which left him nowhere to go later on when Stan hit his real bombs down the stretch. And he was all over the place with his attack. I thought the basic premise of the match, that Hansen no longer had Kobashi outgunned, worked. So I don't agree they had no idea what they were doing, but the match needed a more commanding performance from Kobashi to go from good to great. So, with all of that in mind, what do you make of that as a set of talking points for this match? Because I thought it was unusually detailed analysis on both of their parts here.
I love the match, and I thought it told a great story throughout, and I thought Kobashi's kind of
you know, erraticness of his offense and stuff kind of played into his desperation after getting destroyed. So I don't know. I had it at 4.5 stars, so I thought it was damn good.
Well, I mean, I do think that OJ may be missing that dynamic a little bit that I pointed out earlier on. I will say, however, that Childs does raise a good point in that the match does feel like it has nowhere to go. And for me, I didn't really buy that finish. Like, it didn't seem that the second lariat should put Hansen away. And that finish hurts this match for me. I mean, it's still a really good match, but like, I think it's some way short of the lost classic that a few people, like my buddy Chad, for example, were hailing it on the Yerb. Like, I think Chad had this at 4.75. I'm closer to my 4-star rating for this one.
Yeah.
But
I like
yeah,
the two lariat yeah. finishes. Cause it kind of show like it was Kobashi being so desperate that he's going to use the move that destroyed him to get the win. So I thought that worked to me.
No, I just didn't believe that Hansen would just fall to that, I guess. I think it probably needed more than the two lariats to put him away. I don't know. That was my thought on this. But it's interesting that people seem to be a bit spread on that one, you know? So,
yeah.
Yes.
I thought Hansen was the star of the match, though, for sure. I thought Kobashi wasn't as good as we've seen him in the past, but Hansen was like what really brought this up to another level for me.
I guess it's a good late performance from Hansen, isn't it? Because, you know, you think of him being, he's kind of winding up at this point in his career, isn't he? Like,
oh yeah, yeah.
He's like really since 1993, he's been kind of done or semi-retired or, you know, he's not
the main star anymore.
He's not the main guy. So it's good that he's got this to his name, this late performance, I guess. Yeah, but you're a little bit higher on it than I am. So,
well, I'm a little bit higher on Hansen than you too. So,
I don't know if that's true.
I have him number one as the greatest wrestler ever.
Well, I guess. Yeah. Well, I still love Stan Hansen. I just think that if you, well, you know, as you know, Stephen. If I stick everything through the calculator there, he just doesn't quite have enough goods to come out on top.
We'll see. If I put him in the calculator, he'd get like 30 extra points for his lariat. So
yeah, you see. Okay, let's move on because
We forgot.
Oh yeah,
didn't Hansen hit a tope in this?
Did he?
I think kind of, didn't he?
I mean, it's not bad. I mean, this is a pretty good performance for a 47-year-old. Yeah. I mean, in the context of, like, Flair, when was Flair 47? I guess about 95, 96 sort of time. I mean, he's got some good matches as well from that time. I'm just trying to think, like, Terry Funk, if you think about it. Then again, Nick Bockwinkel, the wonder of science, has got loads of matches in his 50s that are really good. And, you know,
they were born the same year.
Who, Hansen and Flair?
Yeah.
Were they really?
Flair's older.
Than Hansen? Yeah, I'd expect that.
Flair was born in February 49, while Hansen was August of 49.
Wow. So they were both, they would have been both been 47 in 1996. It's interesting. Yeah. See, I think, I mean, Flair's got, I quite like his 1996 because he has that awesome Savage feud.
Yeah, that's true.
And the other little weird things like that. The triangle match with Sting and Luger. That's quite a good one.
Yeah, but I don't think anything hits this level.
I don't know. Well, it's been a while since I've seen that stuff. And, well, I have this at 4 stars. I'm trying to think.
I guess tune into where the big boys play in 2022 or something. You'll get to it.
Yeah. And, yeah, I'm quite excited to watch that stuff again whenever we reach it. And maybe with some of these projects winding down, we might pick up the pace a bit more. So we'll see. Anyway, let's move on because it's September the 5th. This is the same card, I think, as that last match. And now we have Misawa and Akiyama going up against Steve, Dr. Death, Williams, and Johnny Ace. Now, just going into this, is it just me or does Misawa look increasingly knackered in 1996? Like, increasingly tired, older? I mean, is that a beard he's growing here? I think it is.
Yeah, he does. He starts to grow a beard.
And he just looks tired. Like he hasn't been getting enough sleep, or he's just getting a bit more haggard and old, you know? I don't know. He's just, like, you can see him morphing into more of a kind of grizzled character.
Well, he's putting on a lot of stuff. Like, those matches in 94, 95, and 93 have to have played a toll on him. Big time.
Absolutely. And, I mean,
and he's become the main star. Like, Hansen's wound down, Baba's not really there, Jumbo's stepped down, so he's had a lot of pressure and a lot of really damage done to him over the last 3 or 4 years, so it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I wonder if there's been any wrestler who's ever had a bigger toll on him than Misawa in these few years. I don't know. They do always talk about the NWA champions being really destroyed by the schedule and things. Like, Jack Briscoe just wanted to quit, period. Yeah. But I don't know. I can't imagine them going as hard as Misawa must have gone during this period. So
Kurt Angle broke down pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's true.
But that was his own fault.
But then he is an idiot, I guess, isn't he?
Yeah. So. He's doing moonsaults off steel cages on throwaway matches on Raw, so...
Yeah. But then again, if you look at the number of... I mean, we call Angle an idiot. I don't want to call Misawa an idiot, but if you just look at the number of head drops in all of these matches, it's pretty
sick. Angle never got killed in the ring.
Yeah, so. That's true. But I mean, I'm just saying, like, it's every single match is like one or two massive, massive head drop spots. It's like... they got to take their toll, haven't they?
Yeah, and I think that's part of the reason I've been a little, like... that first match, I was, you know, a little bit lower than normal and stuff like that is, you know, Daniel Bryan just retired due to injury. And we found out he's got like the concussion issues, how bad they were. You know, Misawa, you know, died in the ring years later. And the head drops and the dangerous style, you know, it makes you think if we should be praising it at all, you know, it has taken a toll. It's you know, look what it's done to people, and should that type of behavior be encouraged, or, you know, should we be praising stuff more like I don't know, like Sasha Banks and Bayley, who wrestled mostly on the mat last year, and they had these great matches, but they didn't, you know, they didn't kill themselves doing it. So,
well, yeah. Stephen, as somebody who's watched a lot of 70s WWF, I will tell you, I will take this any day.
Yeah.
I do not.
I think there's different extremes. You know? You don't have to turn into Dominic DiNucci just because you don't do head drops.
You'd be lucky if Dominic takes a back bump, I tell you. All right. But yeah, no, I think my basic position is fuck it. I love it.
That's fair.
Sorry, Misawa. I mean, you know, it is a weird thing to think about, but I think ultimately it's just, this style is very cool. Still hasn't lost its impact. So, but he is looking tired. So anyway, that wasn't even a point. That was my superficial note going in. So okay. I only have two little notes for this.
Bob's points.
Is that your best? Oh, too easy. You weak, pathetic fool.
It is, first pass point, the early counter exchange between Akiyama and Ace was unusually sprightly, I thought. And I thought that Johnny Ace had really come out to play today. Discuss.
Yeah, I thought he's definitely looks a lot better than his dynamic dudes time. And he's really fit into the role with being the Steve Williams tag partner. And I was actually wanted to ask you how you think people talk about Gordy and Williams as this all-time great team. But Williams and Ace, they probably a better tag team.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're going to see more of them on the next show, aren't we? But for me, I've just watched Williams and Gordy's run through WCW 1992. Annoyed me as much as anyone who listened to the recent Weatherbird Boys play will know. They annoyed me as much as they did before. I don't think we saw much out of Gordy and Williams in the shows that we've done, Stephen. Were we particularly high on those matches?
No.
They don't really stick out in the memory. Yeah. I want to say Gordy was a very good Stan Hansen partner.
Yeah.
He has some good stuff in the late 80s.
Well, he's a great Michael Hayes partner.
And he's a great Michael Hayes or Buddy Roberts partner as well. I think just Gordy's best work is in the 80s, basically. And he's like got increasing problems in the 90s, and he's kind of lazier and slower and a bit messed up in the head, basically.
Yeah.
So it's not that surprising that he wasn't that good in the 90s.
Well, I was listening to Between the Sheets, and they were talking about basically to get to the flights to Japan, he would take enough drugs so he would just pass out every time. And that can't be good for you. That kind of explains some things, I would think.
Yeah. I definitely think that Johnny Ace is better than Dan Spivey, for example.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I think he's surprisingly good, considering, like, what was he doing? The tag team called Dudes with Attitude, the
dynamic dudes with Shane Douglas.
The dynamic dudes. I mean, they suck. They would genuinely suck, I think. Like, so it's actually surprising. Like, can't think of a guy who's had a better kind of transformation in his career than that. Maybe actually, Rock from Rocky. You know,
Rocky Maivia.
From Rocky Maivia to The Rock is like a. I'd say the transition from that Johnny Ace to this Johnny Ace is as dramatic as that.
Yeah.
Or I don't know, maybe Ringmaster to Stone Cold is another big one as well, isn't it?
Well, yeah, that was gimmick based though. Like,
yeah.
Actually, I don't know. Did we ever see any of Johnny Ace pre All Japan not as a dynamic dude? Like, what was he doing?
I have no idea, actually.
He had to be wrestling somewhere.
I think he may have slightly been on these undercards all like in Japan the whole time on undercard matches. I don't know.
I think at this point, or at least a year later or so, he was the booker of the Americans in Japan.
Oh, he took that over from Old Dory, did he?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Looks like he started in All Japan in 1990.
Yeah, it's earlier than you think.
Yeah. Okay.
So, but I guess he just gave up on his American career. Did he even live in Japan during that time?
Oh, he was the love interest of Mrs. Baba. That's the big story.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Yeah. So he had it made in Japan.
Does that mean that Giant Baba was like a cuckold?
I don't want to think about that.
Bizarre. Strange. Okay.
I think we're derailed.
Well, I've only got one more point for this. I can give it to you if you want, because it's it's a very general one. Steve Williams does a lot of shouting in this match. He shouts at Misawa on the apron in particular. And I think that this gives the bout a very strong sense of hierarchy. Like, there is no doubt that Williams is the big man on his team, and Misawa is the big man on that team. And that shouting makes the dynamic very transparent, I thought. So that was my second note.
The only thing I wrote for this was Doomsday Device. And it took me into watching some future matches before I realized why they were doing the Doomsday Device. Because it's like Johnny Ace's Animal's brother.
I forgot about that. So, yeah, it makes sense that they would use the Doomsday device here, and they use it throughout all their matches.
Do you think it's weird that they never asked him to become like a kind of Jimmy Garvin add-on to the Road Warriors? Like,
I don't think you can put Johnny Ace with the Road Warriors and make it work.
Why not?
I guess he could have took the Paul Ellering role.
Well, he could have put some face paint on, shaved his
Johnny
head.
Johnny Ace with face paint.
Shave what? I don't know. He's a big guy.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think of him as like this rounded Texan or something. Not like he kind of seems like a hipster cowboy or something.
You're saying he's not muscly enough to be a Road Warrior?
Yeah, no, he's not. Come on. Johnny Ace is a Road Warrior. Road Warrior Ace. Come on.
Yeah, you've even given him a name. Yeah. Tell him, Ace. Anyway.
I wish Ace and Dr. Death had a tag name. I was trying to think of this throughout their matches, what it would be. Because, I don't know. You have Dr. Death and you have Johnny Ace. Like, I don't know. There's some weird connection you can make there, but I don't have much notes on the match.
Well, I felt that this one lost its way, really. Meandered for far too long in different portions. For example, when Ace and Williams do that Doomsday device that you mentioned, Misawa just rolls out of the ring.
Yeah.
There's a lot of dead air in this match. Like, what's going on? I found it a bit disjointed and all over the place, and I gave it 3.5 stars.
Yeah, actually, that's where I was, too. I thought it went on too long, and it didn't seem to have a coherent message to portray.
Yes, I agree. And so, Stephen, we have reached the end.
Awesome.
So what awards do we do? Remind me.
Every time. Match of the night, spot of the night, and the top four workers.
Okay, actually quite interesting. Nothing was super high end here. Okay, so let's do the match of the night first.
Which Kobashi match do you want?
Well, you know, I was as high on the opening tag. I had the first two matches at 4.5, and I had the handsome one.
Oh, four. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll go with the Kobashi Tawe. The title win.
I'm going with Kobashi Hansen. I was really digging what they were putting on there.
Okay, fair enough. I think you can see some of my tastes and Steven's tastes reflected in those two choices there. Now, spot of the night. I'll let you go first.
I gotta think here. What really stands? I think you gotta go with Kobashi hitting that leg drop and winning the title. Like, that moment was the best moment of the night by far.
It is a huge moment. However, I think I'm going to go with the atomic drop into the back suplex.
That was pretty good, too.
Sheer, like, I just love how inventive it is and how clumsy it is at the same time.
Yeah.
So yeah. And, yeah, the top four performers on these four matches. Which way round do you have them?
All right. I have Tawe number 4, Kobashi number 3, Kawada number 2, and Hansen number 1.
I can't agree with that at all.
I didn't think you would.
No, I think I will go Misawa, who you didn't mention, number 4. And actually, Akiyama number 4.
I toyed with Akiyama versus Tawe here.
Akiyama number 4, Tawe number 3. I'm going to say Hansen number 2 and Kobashi number 1. Okay. I would have them that way round. Not that Kawada wasn't good in that match. He was. But, you know, there has to be a top 4. So.
Yeah.
And Kobashi basically had more volume here. as did Akiyama, as did Misawa.
Yeah, and you're always lower on Kawada.
Not always, but you know, just he was in one tag match here.
Yeah.
So he was one quarter of one match, whereas Hansen gave a really good performance late in his career, as we talked about. Mm-hmm. Akiyama gave us two good performances. Misawa gave us two, and Kobashi gave us two. So there we go.
Okay, you went with quantity over quality, and I went with quality over quantity.
That was very cheeky putting it that way. Okay, so what we got coming up next time? We've got
We have some changes to our original lab. We originally had an hour-long draw between Kawada and Kobashi from 10/18/96. Which you watched and then told me not to. So we switched that to Taue, Baba, and Dory Funk Jr. versus Misawa, Jumbo, and Akiyama from the same show. And then we have 11. And then we have three matches from the tag league. Misawa, Akiyama versus Williams and Ace. Kawada and Taue versus Williams and Ace. And then Misawa, Akiyama versus Kawada and Taue. Which puts us... right before the finals of that tournament, the famous match, which will be two shows from now. So,
great. Well, join us then.